We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, April 26th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, a hack into healthcare technology company Change Healthcare has been called the most serious incident of its kind to strike the industry. Now, its parent company is digging into what happened. WSJ Pro Deputy Bureau Chief Kim Nash tells us more about the attack and what it means for the healthcare industry. And then, social media is fueling interest in weight loss drugs like Ozempic. But are people getting the whole picture of the drug's side effects? We'll hear more about weight loss drugs and influencers in the age of social media from WSJ special writer Peter Loftus. But first, you may never have heard of Change Healthcare, but it operates the biggest clearinghouse for medical claims in the U.S. In fact, the healthcare technology company touches the health records of 1 in 3 U.S. residents. Back in February, the company realized it had been hacked. Attackers were holding Change's data for ransom, which it paid. Now, as Change is still dealing with the after effects of the cyber attack, its parent company, United Health Group, is investigating how the hackers got in and what they might have stolen. The CEO of United Health is scheduled to testify before Congress next week. WSJ Pro Deputy Bureau Chief Kim Nash joins us now with more on the attack. Kim, why are healthcare companies targets for hackers?
The rich data in a healthcare record is of enormous value on the black market. You've got financial data, personal data, and health data that all can be used in a myriad of nefarious ways, like blackmail or creating a new identity or performing fraudulent activity. And also, the shelf life of healthcare data is so much longer than if a hacker just stole financial data. You can cancel a credit card, but you can't cancel your health record.
So Change Healthcare realized that there was a ransomware attack going on. How did the company initially respond?
Well, it's really hard to tell. I mean, the first thing the company did, though, that we know of was shut off more than 100 of its key technology systems. And that began quickly to have a ripple effect across the healthcare industry. At first, we saw that show up in terms of people walking into pharmacies and not being able to get their prescriptions filled because the pharmacist couldn't check their coverage. And then we saw it ripple out in terms of payments not being made by insurers to healthcare providers. So practitioners, therapists, pediatric ophthalmologists, hospitals were not getting their reimbursements, their revenue coming in that they expected. We do know that they paid the ransom, and it appears to have been $22 million by reporting that's out there, and analysis of the blockchain transactions that we can see. We do not know, however, exactly what data was compromised, and that is something that United Health and Change Healthcare are working on figuring out right now.
And the company's unable to process payments, how long did that last?
It is still lasting. It has been more than 60 days now, and although United Health has worked on restoring systems and has gotten a lot of that work done, there's a tremendous backup of insurance payments that are not going through.
The number of ransomware attacks has been on the rise for the past few years. Why is this one particularly notable?
This is notable because of the place in the healthcare industry where Change Healthcare sits. It is a hub between so many different kinds of healthcare organizations, providers, hospitals, patients, payers, small healthcare systems, large healthcare systems.
That was WSJ Pro Deputy Bureau Chief Kim Nash. Coming up, could seeing a post about Ozempic on Instagram make a person more likely to start taking the drug? More after the break.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Social media platforms are full of posts talking up the latest generation of weight loss drugs like Ozempic. But unlike company drug advertisements, people posting on social media don't have to talk about a drug's side effects. The companies behind these drugs, Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, have criticized social media for portraying weight loss as cosmetic and minimizing obesity as a serious disease. But still, positive buzz online from influencers is causing more people to seek out the drugs. WSJ special writer Peter Loftus joins me now with more. Peter, how are people hearing about these drugs online, and how does advertising fit into it?
There are Facebook community support groups that have tens of thousands of members, and it appears to be just very organic as far as people who start to use these drugs or are interested in them join the support group, and they're able to see other people's posts about their experiences on the drugs and post questions and that sort of thing. Now, that said, what has happened is that in some cases, these posts have morphed into more of an advertising-backed situation or where advertising factors in. So it could be something as direct as, say, one of the telehealth providers that specializes in prescribing weight loss drugs might find certain influencers, and the telehealth provider will actually pay that influencer to specifically post a video about using one of these weight loss drugs. Something else that happens that's in between that is that someone may organically post something about one of the weight loss drugs, and it's all very honest and straightforward, and they didn't necessarily post it in order to make money. But because the post becomes so popular, it gets so many viewers that some of these social media sites have monetization programs where, say, for instance, with YouTube, if your video gets a certain number of viewers or if you have a certain number of subscribers, then YouTube will start to run ads to every person that views that video. And then the person who posted the original video gets a cut of those ads. And so in those situations, it turned into something that earned them money.
Do we have a sense of how common it is for people to start taking drugs because they were influenced by social media?
There was actually one survey that found that more than a third of the people taking one of these drugs for weight loss specifically said that an influencer or celebrity recommendation or personal research was the top factor, and personal research probably meaning online searches and that sort of thing. There's almost a million prescriptions a week written for these now in the U.S., and so to think that maybe a third of them have been influenced in some way by those factors, that's pretty significant.
And how are people getting these drugs?
They're getting the drugs through multiple avenues. And so it is common, even for people who hear about this from social media, to go to their own regular primary care doctor or go to an obesity treatment specialist and say, hey, I heard about Ozempic or Zepbound, and I'm interested in taking it. And then they would have a conversation with their doctor. If the doctor thinks it's a good idea, they'll prescribe it. But now with the rise of telehealth, especially after the pandemic, you have people who are having conversations with doctors by Zoom calls or even just by chats in using these telehealth apps. And there's been a lot of evidence that the patients who do that don't always get the same level of interaction or sort of vetting when they do this all through telehealth. Then there are ways to get these drugs with like minimal or no physician involvement, either through quasi gray market sites, or there are also compounded versions of these drugs, which are basically like alternate versions that are made by these special pharmacies. And they're allowed to do this because the drugs are in short supply. But the original manufacturers, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, have made a big point of saying that they can't vouch for the safety and efficacy of those versions.
From a patient perspective, what are the downsides or even potential risks of getting recommended these drugs via social media?
That's the big issue here, is that in many cases, they may not be getting the full picture. And so it's really a function of the decentralized nature of social media. And so in the past, you had the FDA that approves the drugs and regulates what the companies that make them can say about the drugs. And so they have to describe accurately the benefits of a drug, but also their risks. On social media, if it's just an average person or even an influencer, anyone that's not really directly regulated by the FDA, they can say what they want about these drugs.
Drug advertising is nothing new, and people have been talking about their personal experiences with drugs online for a while. What's notable about this moment?
What's notable and different is just the sheer volume of discussion on social media. I mean, we're talking on TikTok. If you were to search for Ozempic or other drug brands, you would find that there's posts with hundreds of millions of views. And on other platforms, one estimate found that there were something like 2.3 million posts in the last year alone about these drugs. And that's just posts. That doesn't even count comments in response to those posts. And so it's really been almost unprecedented. The social media aspect of this has really thrown these companies, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, for a loop. And they're in a bit of a bind in the sense that they are heavily regulated in what they're allowed to say about their drugs publicly. And so it's difficult for them to wade into just the sheer volume of all the social media discussion of these drugs. And I say that also knowing that they themselves do direct-to-consumer advertising. The difference is that those advertisements are subject to regulations.
That was special writer Peter Loftus. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. I'm your host, Alex Osola. Jessica Fenton and Michael Laval wrote our theme music. Our supervising producer is Catherine Millsop. Our development producer is Aisha Al-Muslim. Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors. And Philana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.